Fellow Falcoholics, what is up? Welcome to episode 188 of the Falcoholic Live. I'm your host, Kevin Knight, at Falcoholic Kevin on Twitter, joined by my co-host tonight. He is at Say Which Way. Adnan, how are you doing tonight?
Doing well. Post-draft, the weather is getting nicer and nicer outside, so you know, it's a bit warm down in Atlanta now. It's gotten into the 80s, but you know, we got to get through it once more. It's feeling like training camp weather, even though that's a few months away.
Yeah, we're mercifully far away from that, but it's going to be really hot very soon there in Georgia, I know. Also joining us tonight, we have two of my favorite draft experts. First of all, we have joining us Tyler Fornes. He's at The Real Forno on Twitter. He's at NBC Sports Edge, as well as The Daily Norseman and elsewhere. Tyler, how are we doing tonight?
I'm doing good. I'm rewatching Andrew Booth Jr. for a piece I'm writing for the Vikings Wire, and I am getting insanely hyped over the selection, and I'm excited to talk about more draft prospects.
Yeah. And speaking of, you know, other folks in the call, we have Thor Nystrom, who is joining us from what I can only assume is the kitchen, but
from the kitchen, and I'm happy to be with you guys. Good to see you again, you know, after we hung out a whole bunch at the Senior Bowl. So happy to be here and excited to talk about the Falcons draft picks.
All right. Yeah, it sounded so I heard some crashing, so I wanted to make sure you were okay in case we needed to call someone. So
you'll just have to see. I mean, like, yeah, usually in the kitchen it's a precarious proposition, but I'm here with you until I get burned on fire by my own devices.
Okay. Well, just give us a signal if you need help. Okay. Yeah.
Sure.
All right. Well, speaking of, you know, needing help, the Falcons really needed help. How about that segue, guys? in the draft, and by all opinions, they got it. Obviously, some picks were more liked by the fan base than others. The first one was one that it was a little bit contentious, only in terms of the position drafted, which is wide receiver Drake London. I know a lot of fans really like the player, but there were sort of questions about whether it was a good idea to take another pass catcher with a premium pick. But London's a great player. I really like him. I'm interested to hear your guys' take on that. Thor, I'll let you get the first crack at Drake London. What do you think about that selection for the Falcons?
I don't know how you can argue against it based on what happened right after it. Even if you're going to argue with who's going to be wide receiver one or not, the Falcons, they read the room right. They kicked off that epic wide receiver run that turned out to be a record-setting wide receiver run. Six of the first 18 picks were receivers. The Falcons got to lead that off with a guy that most people had as the wide receiver one on their board. You know, I mean, they even said that after the draft. He was certainly wide receiver one on my board, so I'm not going to argue with that pick at all, and I think they made a correct decision, both in terms of the prospect they took and also leading that wide receiver run off where they did.
Yeah, it definitely looks better in hindsight. You know, I was someone who really loved Kyle Hamilton. He was one of the top players on my board, so I was a little bit salty we didn't get Kyle Hamilton, but I love Drake London, nothing against Drake London, and I agree with you. The pick looks a lot better when you consider that it sparked off a mad scramble immediately after the pick. Tyler, also interested in your thoughts on the Drake London pick for the Falcons.
In a vacuum, it's great. They prioritized a premium position in the top 10. They got who they believed was the best wide receiver in the draft. And when you look at consensus, Drake London was among the best receivers in the draft, which it's really hard to complain about the selection. I'm a little concerned about how seamless the fit will be with what Arthur Smith likes to do with his passing concepts. I think that they could have found a better fit with any of Jameson Williams, Chris Olave, and Garrett Wilson. So from that perspective, I'm a little more down than other analysts might be. But I also like the element of, hey, we're just going to play jump ball football and get two of the best contested catch players now in the National Football League. You have Drake London and Kyle Pitts. You're going to have big boys manning those guys, and they're going to – a lot of those big boys at corner aren't going to be as fluid a mover, so you're going to be able to utilize quickness and footwork to really gain separation that way. I think it's going to work, but there were other players, because I had him as my wide receiver four, but they were all in such a tight group where, in my perspective, like, it's not that big of a deal. Like, I'm not going to bury a pick because you picked my number four instead of my number one. They were all in a cluster. So
yeah, same tier. Yeah,
very, very much the same tier. I would have prioritized a different style, but I'm very intrigued to see how Arthur Smith makes it work, because he obviously has a vision, and with two guys that size, it's going to be very difficult for teams to match up.
Yeah, and they signed Auden Tate in free agency as well, who's another 6'5 receiver. Obviously, his problem has been that he can't stay healthy. So, you know, they could get a lot of size out there if they want. We know that London has a lot of experience as a big slot. That's where he spent his first 2 years in college. Auden Tate's played on the outside in the slot. We've seen Kyle Pitts play outside, play lined up as a tight end, and also in the slot too. So they have a lot of size out there. They specifically mentioned Drake London's physicality as a blocker, which, you know, maybe that's not the primary thing you should grade a receiver on when you're taking him in the top 10. But I know that they will be asking him to block a fair amount, particularly with this new offense that we're going to see. That's probably going to look a little bit more similar to Tennessee's offense this year, more run focused. And with the offensive line presumably still bad, they're going to need help blocking from just about anyone they can. Yeah, Adnan, anything else you wanted to add on the Drake London pick? I know we got your thoughts on the live show, but anything else?
I wasn't a fan of going with wide receiver in general, just the general philosophy of it, especially given the fact that the player that I thought was the best player in the draft, Kyle Hamilton, was on the board, and what a hell of a pick by the Ravens. For them to get Kyle Hamilton at pick, 13, 14, was it?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, like these guys mentioned it, you can't really argue against it given what happened right after, not only in terms of the huge run on wide receivers, but also on day two, which I thought the Falcons had a phenomenal day two, addressing their pass rush need, which has been a need for over a decade, by double dipping at pass rush, which is something that we've been calling for on the draft show for years. You know, they even got their quarterback in the third round. They addressed some more offensive positions later on day three. So just having the benefit of hindsight, I like the pick a lot more than I did right after it was made. And not that it was a bad pick. Like I said, at the time of the selection in a vacuum, Drake London will definitely make this team a better team. I think he's the best wide receiver in the draft. I thought it definitely makes sense, given the fact that Arthur Smith really likes having those big physical wide receivers. He likes playing that hard play action style of ball where you just throw it up there for your wide receivers. He didn't really have that personnel in Atlanta this past year, and you can tell that he's really emphasizing that and building upon that with the Kyle Pitts selection last year, and now with the Drake London selection, and signing guys like Auden Tate as well, who's also 6'5".
Yeah, the size and the physicality, it's going to be very different this year. We'll hope that translates into offensive success and not just Brian Freeman in the chat says, they won't just look good getting off the bus, hopefully. They'll actually be a good, effective football team as well. Moving on, because we got a lot of picks to get to. Next up in the draft was a small trade up involving a fourth round pick for edge rusher Arnold Ebiketie from Penn State. One of my favorite picks in the draft. I loved Ebiketie. So I'm interested to see what you guys think about it as well. Tyler, I'll go to you first on this one. What did you think about that Ebiketie selection for the Falcons?
I really like the upside. Obviously he's still a little raw, even though he played at Temple for a little while before transferring to Penn State. Penn State's just an athlete factory at this point. Yeah. They just keep producing hyper athletes that just are able to come in the NFL, and they can thrive just based on their athleticism. I think he's got a little bit of work to do as far as technique, but the guy can bend around the edge. He can win with his length. He's got a little bit of nuance to his pass rushing. I think this is a really nice fit. Personally, you really can't complain about it. They prioritize the pass rusher. They moved up a little bit to go get him. Obviously, it was probably the smart move because Boye Mafe went just two picks later to the Seattle Seahawks. And they got their guy, and hopefully that he can be really grow within that system and become a stalwart pass rusher for the Falcons.
Yeah, and that was the interesting thing to me was I wasn't sure if they would value Boye over Ebiketie. It seems they chose Ebiketie, who I think is a little bit closer. You know, Boye has the athletic ceiling that's like ridiculous. You know, obviously Ebiketie, 8.9 RAS, still an elite athlete, but you know, Mafe is like 9.8 or 9.9 or something like that. So it's, you know, a little bit more raw versus a little bit more ready. And obviously the upside's a little bit different, but that was interesting to me that they went with Ebiketie there, because I know this is a front office that really values athleticism. So it's probably splitting hairs between the differences with those guys, but it is interesting. Thor, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on the Ebiketie pick as well.
Steal. He should have gone in the late first round. We had heard from evaluators throughout the process, the top 10 to 10 to top 15 or whatever. It was a little bit less than you would expect qualitatively from the previous 3-4 years. What was stronger? Second round, third round, fourth round, fifth round, right? Like, and starting at the top of the second round, Ebiketie is a guy who probably in most classes would have gone late first round. It's just he was stuck by circumstance. He was a victim of circumstance. He's caught in this edge rusher situation, sort of like Mafe, sort of like Ajabo, different sort of lean into the circumstance. But those guys were all a victim of circumstance in a very, very deep edge rushing class. It was both top heavy, but also just, deep throughout. So, I mean, both those guys got, all three of those guys I just mentioned, they got shoved down a little bit on the board. The Atlanta Falcons were a team that benefited from that.
Yeah, I like to pick a lot, and I'm really excited. They desperately needed the pass rush help, I would say even more than the wide receiver help that they got in the first round. So hopefully he'll be able to come in and make an impact early. Don, anything else you wanted to add on the Ebiketie pick?
No, it was a great pick and a huge position of need. The Falcons' pass rush was maybe their weakest position group last year. They had 18 sacks overall. Those who were 31st had 30 sacks. There were two players in the NFL who had more sacks individually than the Falcons did as an entire team. And, Ebiketie is a guy who, he'll get into the backfield, had 8 for loss last year at State, 9.5 sacks. He's someone who's incredibly disruptive. And the Falcons, they really need someone who's incredibly disruptive, because they lost their top pass rusher from last year, Dante Fowler, who wasn't really that great. But in comparison to everyone else, he looked like a competent starter. So, the Falcons could not go into this season with the pass rushing depth and starters that they had before the draft. And, you feel a lot better about it now coming out of the draft.
Yeah, I agree. They addressed it again later on day two. The next pick, one of the more, I guess, controversial picks in terms of where people had him valued. It's sort of all over the place with linebacker Troy Anderson out of Montana State. Some had him in the 50s where he went. Some had him more as like a third rounder. Some had him even in the fourth round. So I'm interested to know where you guys fall on him. Thor, where did you have Troy Anderson, and what do you think about the Falcons taking him late in the second round?
As far as where he went, I don't have any problems with that in terms of like the slot value or whatever. As far as an athlete, fabulous. I mean, like what can you nitpick about that? It's not just like the Raz that he turned in as a linebacker. It's not just the work he did in college at that position. It's also that you've seen him do multiple other things. You saw him start at quarterback. You've seen him as a runner. You've seen him as all these different things. And you've seen the athleticism play at all those different positions. He's a guy that hopefully for the Falcons, he's more of a, as opposed to a master of Aziz Ajulari, not Ajulari, but as opposed to being a master of none, he's the skill set will coalesce to be a star at one. But
Aziz Ansari, I think.
Yeah. I'm a football guy. I'm always thinking of, Ajulari.
Ajulari.
His brother is coming out in the next class. So we're going to be talking about plenty. But yeah, I mean, like, as far as he goes, like, the athleticism plays at both. Is he going to play up at linebacker once the instincts play up? I'm coming to you guys from Minneapolis. Last year, the Vikings, they took Chaz Surratt in the third round or whatever. And my question with him was, with that guy, was he has the athleticism, he has the game instincts, he has the football IQ. But at that time, it was he triggered a little bit late. You were wondering about the coverage, even though he had the athleticism for it. That stuff hasn't jumped up as much, So we'll see with Anderson if the instincts get there. But as far as the athletic profile, as far as the frame, he has everything you need. As far as the heart, he has everything you need for that position. I prefer him where the Falcons got him over where the Vikings got Chaz Surratt at the time. But, we'll see how it turns out. But I didn't mind the Anderson pick at all.
Yeah, I liked it. I was pretty high on him. That's sort of about where I expected him to go. You always have to draft guys of that athletic profile higher than the board says. Like, it's just always going to be the case. Yeah, Tyler, what do you think about the Troy Andersen pick? Where were you sort of on him before the draft process?
As Thor kind of said, it's really hard to complain about it. I'm a little bit surprised that he went above Chad Muma, considering what kind of athlete Muma is and how technical he is at the position, along with being explosive. But Andersen has the potential to be a way more explosive. Not only did he play quarterback for Montana State, but he was a first team All Big Sky as a sophomore. And that really speaks to what kind of player he was on the offensive side of the football. And like for me, as Thor references Chad Surratt, the biggest difference for me between the two, Troy Andersen can shed a block. The second anybody gets their hands on Chad Surratt, he goes down like a ragdoll. The rep is done for him. So I like that they're prioritizing an athlete that already is continuing to grow with the technical elements of the position, because this is a team that's not ready to compete now. By the time we hit year three, where the goal is to be competing by like the third year of Arthur Smith, you're going to have Troy Andersen having been in the league for a year or two, and boom, that's when you're really going to see the peak. And I like the long-term aspect of it. He's going to be able to get playing time early and often and learn on the fly without feeling a ton of pressure. I think this is a really, really nice pick for Atlanta.
Yeah, I agree. I really like the pick. I love the upside and also where they are in their sort of trajectory. I think it makes a lot of sense to take a swing on a guy that could be the most athletic, maybe is the most athletic linebacker in the NFL, and the ceiling that sort of entails. Adnan, anything you would like to add on the Andersen pick as well?
It definitely fills another need. The Falcons definitely needed a linebacker after Foye Oluokun left, and you know, we're expecting Deion Jones to not be on the team after this upcoming season. I was a little surprised. I thought that this would have been a prime spot for N'Kobe Dean, but he fell and he kept falling down into the 80s. So, you know, that was just an unexpected slide, and the Falcons obviously weren't comfortable enough with the medicals. But now Troy Andersen, I think he had the highest RAS score of all time for a linebacker, a full-on 10. And yeah, this is one of those picks, like Tyler says, it's not a win now pick, but the Falcons aren't really in a win now position this upcoming season. So, you know, this will be a testament to just how much, or excuse me, this will be a perfect case study to just how much the Falcons coaching staff on the defensive side of the ball can coach someone up, because Troy Andersen is straight up like a ball of clay. Like you will possibly be able to coach this guy up into a really, really high level player. And, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what Dean Pease and his team of coaches will do with Andersen. And, you know, this is a guy who can do a whole bunch of stuff. You know, he's not relegated to just one part of the field, to just one singular position. This may even be someone who in the future we see on some offensive gadget plays possibly, and he'll make an immediate impact on special teams from day one too.
Yeah, I agree. His special teams upside is also really special. We'll see how long he plays special teams, and if he reaches his ceiling as a linebacker, then he's
hopefully
probably not going to be
long. Not long as a second rounder, but he should make an impact in year
one.
Yeah,
exactly. Year one for sure. He could be a true special teams demon. Next pick, one of the ones that I think is most interesting for this team, Desmond Ridder going to the Falcons in the early third round, way later than I think most sort of thought, even those that were lower on him. So I'm interested. I know Thor has to leave in just a little bit, but Thor, I wanted to get your thoughts on Ridder, and then if you have anything else you want to add about any of the other players in the class before you take off, go ahead and throw that in too.
I mean, where they got him, how are you going to argue with it? You know, I probably would have taken, I would have taken Willis before him, you know, for sure. But that being said, I comp him to Marcus Mariota for a reason. He had the same athletic profile. He has the same sort of build. They even look the same. You know what I mean? Like every single thing. It's just that they came out of a different collegiate system. Marcus Mariota played in that breakneck system for Chip Kelly and Helfrich. Ridder was taught more of a risk aversion thing, you know, as far as the system. He came out with Luke Fickell, but I think in the NFL, you're going to get a very similar thing from both of them. The athleticism is more north to south within 10 yards. You're not going to get as much evasion from either of them in the open field, but Ridder in the same way as Mariota, he's going to be able to steal yards in the NFL, just perhaps not as pronounced a dual threat element as people thought Mariota had coming out. But I think it's the same. Like I said, I think it's the same game in the NFL. Mariota, you had to pay the premium for him, you know, at number two or wherever he went in his ultimate class. Whereas with Desmond Ridder, he fell lower, I think, because of context. But I think he is a much better value in the slot that he came for than Marcus Mariota was, but very similar players and prospects.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, you think of Mariota being a number two overall pick and Ridder being a third rounder. It's like, well, both these guys can be starting quarterbacks. You know, maybe Mariota was overdrafted, Ritter's underdrafted, but hopefully they both turn into starters, and Ridder hopefully can have a little more durability than Mariota. That's kind of been his thing. But any of the other players that you wanted to touch on, Thor, before we let you go?
I mean, you know, as far as the Falcons, I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, it was a really interesting weekend. You know, I mean, like Thursday night started out with a bang. We had the record amount of trades, record amount of movement. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of surprising guys in slots. You know, I mean, you toss out a whole bunch of them. You know, Cole Strange is one of them. But Quay Walker, you know, a whole bunch of them. It was a really interesting weekend where this draft process, I thought teams held their cards more to the vest than in recent years in terms of with the media. And then they also were more, you know, amongst themselves, they were way more active than we had seen in recent years, at least at the top of the board. So it's a fascinating draft. I think it was a deeper draft than we've seen in recent years. I think you're going to see more day three picks that turn into contributors. I think you're going to see more UDFAs turn into contributors than you're used to from regular years. So the fact that I saw the Falcons class that in UDFA, they signed like a billion different players. So hopefully that turns out to be good for them. But yeah, going beyond the first round, I think you're going to see more contributors than you usually do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, guys, he is Thor Nystrom at Thor Koo on Twitter. Thor, anything else you want to plug before you take off?
You can find me on Twitter at Thor KU, and you can find my work on NBC Sports Edge, as you can find Tyler's.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Thor, for spending a little bit with
good
us. Yep. Have a
talk
good night.
To you later, man.
All right, Tyler, same question to you. We'll start with Desmond Ridder. I know you were a little bit lower on him than sort of, I mean, let's be honest, everyone's all over the place on these guys. You and I were both huge fans of Malik Willis. I was higher on Ridder, but what do you think about Ridder coming to Atlanta, especially considering where he was drafted?
Let's talk about this in two phases, because I think in a vacuum, this is a really good pick. The easy comparison is Marcus Mariota, and you see a lot of the same things on film. I worry about Desmond Ridder's accuracy because he had flashes of brilliance, but nothing was ever consistent, and it never got consistent as throughout 4 years as a starter for the Bearcats. That was really concerning to me. The footwork is all over the place. The arm is fine. It felt like Luke Fickell and that offensive staff really schemed up plays. You could see Alec Pierce bailing him out a lot, and all those little nuances, like a third round value, fine by me. I have zero complaints about it because there is potential. He's one of the smartest players to come into this draft. And at the quarterback position, having intelligence is the reason why Peyton Manning became a Hall of Famer. It wasn't because of his arm. It wasn't because of his athletic ability. He was so much smarter than everybody else that he was able to process things inherently quicker and make those throws because his arm strength was not helping him. Ridder has a much better arm and athletic profile, but he has real intelligence that's going to help him early and often and throughout the entirety of his career. The reason why I don't like this pick is Malik Willis is still on the board.
Yeah.
Malik Willis was my number three player in the class. He was Thor's number one, passing over Malik Willis for Desmond Ridder, even though I get it, the connection with Mariota, how they're inherently similar players. And being able to develop him with Mariota on the roster is a very attractive piece. But Malik Willis has stuff that is rarer than rare. And to prioritize Ridder over that is honestly disappointing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people assumed that the Falcons were, when they were trading up to 38 for Ebikadi, that they were going to get Malik Willis. I think that was what a lot of people thought, myself
included.
The
Vikings passed on Malik Willis six separate times.
Yeah.
Broke my heart, every one of them.
Yeah, so I'm honestly hoping that the NFL is wrong about Malik Willis and that he ends up surprising, because he's such a fun player. And if he hits his ceiling, that's just going to be an electric player to watch in the NFL. He'll be one of the most fun players every single week. You know, and I also hope Desmond Ridder is good for the Falcons' sake. I think obviously getting him in the third round, you know, the opportunity cost isn't huge. And, you know, I think that we will see him this year in Atlanta. And I'm hoping it works out, certainly. We got Corey Carter with the $1 saying, hey, Russell Wilson went in the third round at pick 75. Ridder went in the third round at pick 74. So, you know, Corey, by that logic, yeah. Ritter should be one pick better, right? So,
you know, with that logic, Kellen Mond should be in the Hall of Fame, but Kellen Mond's probably never going to start a game in his life. Like, yeah. If you set the expectation that Desmond Ritter can be the next Russell Wilson, you're setting yourself up to be disappointed. Just let the process play out. Don't have any expectations other than I hope he becomes a quality starter, and then you won't be just massively let down when he doesn't turn into a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, yeah, and at this point, it's like, you know, if he just becomes a good backup with a third-round pick, it's like, oh, that's pretty good value then. You know, maybe you could flip him like the Patriots did Jimmy Garoppolo, but, you know, we'll see how it goes. I like Desmond Ritter, but I agree, it's like, I'm disappointed that we didn't get to see Malik Willis in Atlanta. I think that would have been fun, but, you know, it's hard to argue with the value overall. It's just like, there was, you know, so close. But, Adnan, anything you wanted to add on the Ritter selection as well?
I mean, I think every team that walked away with a quarterback in this draft walked away with good value other than the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think the Steelers were the only real losers in that entire quarterback, you know, carousel that we've saw. And only because I think they massively misjudged the value of the quarterbacks in reference to other teams. I think that they thought that they were going to start a quarterback run with Kenny Pickett at 20, and that quarterback run just never happened because not a single quarterback went in the second round. I don't remember the last time we had one quarterback selected in the entirety of the first two rounds of the draft. I think the closest was the EJ Manuel draft where he was the first rounder, but then, you know, Geno was in the second, and there were, I think, a few more in the second round. But you know, Ritter is a guy where we were talking about before the draft of will the Falcons, you know, possibly prioritize moving up from the second round in back into the first round to get him, because, you know, we were assuming that with the quarterback tax that there was no way he was going to be there in the second round, and we weren't expecting that of Malik Willis or Kenny Pickett either.
Yeah, I agree.
This was their guy, obviously. Yeah. You know, they had the entire coaching staff over there at his pro day. You know, he did a pretty good job at his pro day. And, you know, this is I think we'll see Ritter from day one this year, especially, well, not from week one, but from year one, especially if the Falcons are as bad as I think that they'll be this upcoming season. You know, why not throw him out there and see what he's got and potentially even increase his value? The fact that he was a third-round pick, this doesn't take away from the potential of getting a quarterback next year if you're in that position and, you know, you really fall in love with a Stroud or a Bryce Young. You know, we don't know what will happen between now and then, or if there's another quarterback that just sets the world on fire like Joe Burrow did at LSU. And just because you're not really going to be heartbroken over bringing in a first rounder to compete with your third round quarterback. You're not married to Ritter long term, but since Ritter was their guy, it will be nice to see what he's got this year. And if he does end up being a productive starter, then that's a steal. That's an absolute steal to get a productive starter in the third round in the NFL. So, you know, at best, he becomes a very good starter. At worst, you lost out on a third round pick, which has happened before with picks like Desmond Southward, with picks like Deidrin Sinnott. But at least this way, you're betting on the high upside of a starting quarterback as opposed to just a decent defensive piece whom you expected was never really going to be decent in terms of that Southward pick, because, you know, we were shaking our head at that time. And we're shaking our heads even more now.
Yeah, yeah. I know we had George come in, and Tyler, for the record, so you have the context, George is one of our longest tenured viewers, and he correctly predicted Kyle Pitts, and he was all in on Jordan Davis this year for the Falcons. That obviously didn't come true, sadly. Jordan Davis is like his guy. But he's basically saying that, you know, he's concerned that Malik Willis couldn't start at Auburn and that Bo Nix beat him out, and concerns about his game tape against some of the better teams they played. I know you're super high on Willis, and I'm just, you know, what would you sort of say to those critiques of Willis?
Coaches are dumb. And I will say this, Bo Nix, as a true freshman, looked pretty good. It looked like there was going to be a track record of him continuing to grow. I mean, in his first ever game against Oregon at Jerry World, he led a game-winning drive against Oregon and Justin Herbert. Like, there was a lot of positive that you could take from Bo Nix's freshman season and hope you could extrapolate and move forward. It didn't happen. It is what it is. And Malik Willis went to a team with Liberty who plays a backyard football offense with 10 UDFA players surrounding him, and he had to play hero ball a lot. When you have to play hero ball a lot, you can get whipped by really good teams. And he also went into the Carrier Dome and beat Syracuse by 17 points without throwing to one side of the field, because Ifeatu Melifonwu was covering on that side. Didn't target him once. Beat him by 17. Like, this guy has that extra element. He has the ability. Imagine putting a guy that has to play hero ball all the time to win football games with a structured offense that gives you opportunities to make plays down the field, and playing with actual NFL talent. You put him in those situations, and I'm expecting him to thrive, which is why I was incredibly high on him. And he went to the Senior Bowl in an incredibly structured environment, because that was something that was a knock on him because of the style of offense and having to play so much hero ball. And he thrived, and he looked great. He looked like one of the best five players in Mobile. No, hands down. You take that, you extrapolate it across an offense. I was very, very impressed with him. And it doesn't concern me that he got beat out at Auburn. Justin Fields got beat out at Georgia by a limp noodle in Jake Fromm. College coaches are dumb. And they let great players leave all the time because they prioritize one that's not as great. It is what it is. I'm not reading into the fact that you didn't beat out Bo Nix. Not at all.
Yeah. Yeah. And George, we're not talking about the Senior Bowl game. We're talking about the practices. Because, I mean, the Senior Bowl game is not really important.
A 50-yard scramble in the Senior Bowl game, and then Chad Muma looked like a monster taking him down.
That's true. Those were also some nice plays as well. But, I mean, obviously we'll see. I think it is a good situation for him to go into in Tennessee. He's not going to be forced onto the field, and it's a good offense for his talent. Let's move on to the next pick, the final pick of day two. It was D'Angelo Malone, another Senior Bowl player. The Falcons took 5 Senior Bowl players this year. D'Angelo Malone, the edge rusher from Western Kentucky, who famously whooped Trevor Penning in the practices a couple times.
That'll be great if the Falcons can do that.
Yeah, if we could. That's probably the reason they drafted him, because he was Trevor Penning's kryptonite somehow, despite looking like a little, like a tiny man next to Trevor Penning. But Tyler, what do you think about the D'Angelo Malone pick for the Falcons? Seems like the Falcons are going in a more speed direction with the Ebikadie and the Malone picks here.
I really like D'Angelo Malone. Tall, lanky, great production at Western Kentucky. I believe 34 sacks throughout his career. He's got the ability to bend around the edge. And I love that. Yeah, he's got burst, athleticism. He can win with power, as you mentioned, the Trevor Penning rep. Penning needs to figure out how to, one, plant, and two, get his hands at the defender. My Jai Sanders was doing it to him too. I like Malone quite a bit. I think this is a great value. You get two hyper athletic, high upside pass rushers in round two and round three. A big win for Atlanta. This is probably my favorite pick of the draft for the Falcons.
Yeah, I know a lot of people are super high on Malone. I know a lot of people haven't necessarily seen him also at Western Kentucky, you know, not necessarily somebody, a school that a lot of like casual fans will watch. But yeah, I mean, I think this is
saying people don't watch the Hilltoppers?
I mean, they should have last year, right? They had Bailey Zappi and D'Angelo Malone and some other NFL players. So, you know, last year was the year to watch the Hilltopper football program. But
I love Bailey Zappi. I'm excited for him to beat out Mac Jones for the starting job in training camp. I'm only half memeing, but like, Why draft Mac Jones round one when you can have Bailey Zappe in round four?
I mean, why? What is it like? What's the point? I agree. You know, Bailey Zappe to God will be taking over soon. You can go put money on that, guys, according to Tyler. No, this is not financial advice. Okay, this is not financial advice.
No.
Don't really do that, guys. But I like the Malone pick too. Adnan, what do you think about Malone and the Falcons adding another pass rusher on day two?
Oh, I was right. I'm right there with you, Tyler. This is my favorite pick of the draft for the Falcons. D'Angelo Malone. This is a guy that has a chance to make an impact as a pass rusher from day one in Atlanta. He has mouth-watering tools. He's going to be able to beat you off the speed rush. And, you know, he's someone where obviously we were very excited about his performance against Panning, considering the fact that the Saints went and got Trevor Panning at pick 19, which, you know, I don't know. I feel like they were galaxy braining that one a little bit. But, you know, we'll see what happens. I think that Malone is a guy where the Falcons will put him in a position to just go out there and go after the quarterback. I don't think he'll be in many base packages where he'll have to meet up against the run and stop the run. I think he'll be out there on every single third down this season. And I think that Dean Pees will put him in a position to thrive where, you know, you just put him in a spot where all he has to focus on is pinning his ears back and going after the quarterback. And, you know, I think that the Falcons, with the picks of Malone and Ebikadie, will definitely have more than 18 sacks this year.
Yeah, I hope so. For God's sake, they better have more sacks than that. It's going to be a long season otherwise. Getting into these day three picks, less than expected because they traded away the fourth rounder to go get Arnold Ebikadie. The first was their fifth rounder, a running back, the first running back pick of the Arthur Smith regime. Tyler Allgeier from BYU, big physical style of running back. Tyler, what do you think about Allgeier coming to the Falcons, who cut Mike Davis after the draft as a result of this pick? What do you think about Allgeier joining the Falcons offense?
I'm a little disappointed Thor's not here because I would have loved to have a conversation about this. I like Allgeier quite a bit more than he does. And what Allgeier brings to this is he is a good one-cut zone system style of back. He is a little bigger. His burst quite isn't all the way there. And that he has good enough speed once he gets all the way going, but he's not going to really break away from people. He's going to burst through contact. He's great in the passing game, both as a blocker and as a receiver. I think this is a really nice value selection for the Atlanta Falcons at the running back position where they need depth. And I think he can be a starter, even potentially as a rookie. But I don't know if he's ever going to be able to take that next level, which a lot of backs in this system can take that next level with low capital. You think of Elijah Mitchell. You think of all the running backs that Mike Shanahan dug out of obscurity and got them to 1,000 yards rushing. Mike Anderson, Orlandis Gary. He got Terrell Davis in the Hall of Fame as a sixth-round pick. Like, you can do a lot with Allgeier. I don't think there was really anybody better on the board. The ultimate pick that they could have made if they would have kept that fourth rounder is Pierre Strong Jr. from South Dakota State. I love him.
Yeah.
And I think he can be like a top 10 net back in the National Football League if he's in the right system, which the wide zone, perfect system for him. But really good value in round five. I have zero complaints about Allgeier.
Yeah. It fills a big need. You know, the Falcons moved on from Mike Davis, who didn't have as much success at running back as was expected last year when he was signed to sort of be the starter. Cordarrelle Patterson really overshadowed him, and maybe, you know, that's not fair to Mike Davis because Patterson outshined basically all the running backs that were signed last year across the league. But yeah, I think Allgeier's in line for a big role as the early down guy. They can leave the high leverage carries to Patterson. He doesn't have to, you know, take the grunt carries anymore. He can stay fresh while Allgeier grinds out those yards and blasts people. And I think the Falcons are going to need that because they're going to try to run the ball more. They need to do it more successfully. But we'll see if Allgeier can help them do that. Adnan, what do you think about the addition of Allgeier to Atlanta's offense?
Well, like you said, I think he'll be able to eat a lot of those junk carries where, you know, you need someone. He has the size, he has the physicality, to not really break down after having a lot of those carries, the way that we kind of saw Cordarrelle Patterson break down a little bit toward the end of last season, just from all of the overworking. And part of that was because Mike Davis wasn't very effective. And, you know, as a result of this pick, a direct result is that Davis was cut. The Falcons saved some cap space. I feel like that was a move that we were expecting a lot sooner, but yeah. You know, I understand waiting for the draft and waiting to see for sure that you'll have the guy. Algier, I think could be this team's, you know, starter on paper this coming year, at the running back position, with Cordarrelle Patterson obviously getting those high leverage touches. And Cordarrelle Patterson, now you can sort of move him out wide a little bit more and move him into positions, get a bit more creative with him, just because last year we were watching it, because the running game outside of Patterson was so ineffective, you kind of had to relegate him to just the backfield and to giving him those touches just to get something going in the running attack. And hopefully with Algier and with Damian Williams this year, it'll be a bit more effective, especially at around that goal line, where I don't remember the last time the Falcons had a physical bruiser who you could just hand the ball off to near the goal line and have him go get you 7 points. Devontae Freeman, maybe, back during his heyday. Obviously, the popular comparison is Michael Turner way back in the day. I don't think Algier will be that good. Turner was...
special, you know, here in Atlanta.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But yeah, this will be, I love the idea of having Algier in a committee type role with the Falcons. And the fact that he's a good pass blocker is massive, because, you know, you can't get on the field as a young running back if you can't protect the passer. That's rule number one. And, you know, he has the potential to be a pretty complete back overall, even if his speed isn't all completely there. Definitely getting the Falcons a lot more physical, especially around the goal line.
Yeah, the thing, and Tyler touched on it, you know, he's a one cut and go back. The short area quickness and explosiveness is where Algier makes his money. The long speed, like you said, pretty average. I mean, it's not bad, 4.6, but it's fairly average for an NFL running back. It's just that burst, and when he gets into the open field, he just gets those chunks so quick. And he's hard to tackle. You know, he had a ton of missed tackles in college, forced missed tackles. You know, yards after contact were very good. So, big fan of Algier. I'm hopeful that he'll have a big role. We haven't seen really how this regime uses their rookie running backs. Under Dan Quinn, the Falcons were famously sort of gun shy with their rookie running backs. They didn't really give them a lot of opportunities. You know, Ito Smith, Quadri Olison. These guys didn't really get much opportunity under the past regime. We'll see if Arthur Smith is willing to give these rookies a lot more work now that he's in charge. And they sort of have to, and you sort of think they will, considering they cut Mike Davis. So they must have some sort of role and vision for Algier here. Two more picks to go, both sixth rounders here. The first was an offensive line pick and a dog. So I know Falcons and Georgia fans were sort of, you know, relieved to finally get a dog in here. I think it had been like 10 years or something since Akeem Dent. So Justin Schaefer from Georgia, the guard. I know he was not necessarily the one people thought would get drafted first. You know, a lot of people were bigger fans of Jamari Salyer, myself as well. But Tyler, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on Justin Schaefer and possibly why he was drafted significantly ahead of Salyer in the draft.
I'm going to be honest. I don't know. I don't know a ton about Schaefer. I do know he's kind of just a solid guy.
Yeah.
He's not going to be overly explosive. He's not going to be overly like powerful or technical. He's just going to be a good football player. And to get a guy who can have a little bit of versatility at the back end around six, I think is a really good call. Just because I like to stir things up, I do want to say, Kevin, go Gators. and I know that'll make everybody, all the Falcons fans, very happy.
Yeah. All the Georgia fans, yeah, they're gonna be real, real salty. Yeah,
that's fair. We got our asses whipped this year.
Yeah, well, Georgia was just absurd. So, you know, what do you do? What do you do against that?
Nothing.
Nothing for it. So, yeah, I agree. Like Justin Schaefer, you like the offensive line competition, but, you know, considering they had dumped two picks into the offensive line, interior offensive line last year with Jalen Mayfield and Drew Dahlman. I was sort of expecting that they wouldn't add anyone just because they already had those resources invested, and it seems like they were sort of content to let Mayfield and Hennessy and Dahlman sort of duke it out. I do like that they added the competition. You know, we'll see if he can make any noise. He was a very good run blocker. That was sort of his strength. The pass protection sort of spotty, and we'll see what happens there. But he did play left guard, so you'd figure that he's going to be competing with Mayfield for that left guard spot. And we'll see if he can make any noise. Adnan, as our resident, you know, Georgia connoisseur, what do you think about Justin Schaefer to the Falcons?
I was also surprised that this wasn't Salyer. Yeah. To be honest with you, yeah. I feel like they over prioritized the physicality and the mean streak a little bit with this pick, because that's one of the things that Schaefer was known for. You know, he has those very heavy hands. He's very, very aggressive. You know, he's very nasty out there, which are synonyms that which are traits that you really like hearing for your offensive lineman, but none of that really will matter if he isn't, you know, decent at the position. And, you know, it's a sixth round pick. You know, he's someone that has had trouble with his footwork. He'll definitely need to focus on that, work on that a little bit. But given the fact that Jalen Mayfield was so bad for the team last year, if he comes out of the gates struggling like that again this season, or if the Falcons don't prioritize, you know, signing a guard in any free agent period before the season, which, you know, now they have some cap space to do so, if they want to add competition to that, Schaefer could possibly even get his chance at the left guard position. He only played left guard. I think that's he'll only exclusively be playing that position in the NFL. He doesn't have the versatility to move around any. But, you know, this was a bit questionable, in my opinion, given who was on the board. But, you know, hopefully you're hoping that he figures out the footwork and the balance a little bit, and that he figures it out, just because it's always a great trait to have someone that aggressive along the interior of your offensive line, especially given the fact that the Falcons have been a team that's been bullied, you know, for years now, just because they've been way too finesse. And I feel like they over prioritized it a little bit, but of course we're rooting for him, and, you know, definitely double rooting for him given the fact that he was a dog as well.
Yeah, I know the dogs fans are very excited about Schaefer, just to get a dog in here.
Gotta fill the quota.
So, speaking of filling the quotas, you know, we joked that the Falcons needed to add two dogs in this class to you know, make up for the fact that they hadn't taken any in like a decade. They did add another Georgia player, probably not the one that anyone was expecting, in tight end John Fitzpatrick. Not a player I had watched. I watched a little bit of Georgia tape after the selection. Blocking tight end with size, which seems to be an emphasis point for this offense. 6'7", 260, good blocker, good hands. You know, I don't know that the athleticism is anything more than average, but you know, with Arthur Smith running so much 12 personnel, you have to think that that's a pick that, you know, hopefully is going to replace Lee Smith in terms of his blocking prowess. Tyler, you have any John Fitzpatrick takes, or just in general, the Falcons adding a big tight end? What do you think about that?
Adding a big tight end in an Arthur Smith offense is always a good thing. I'll be honest. I didn't get a chance to watch Fitzpatrick at all, yeah. But if you're getting a big blocking tight end, that it appears that he does have a little bit of receiving acumen, that's always a benefit, because then you can do some leak stuff. You can get some screens going with him. And then you can get the defense thinking rather than just reacting on initial view. Like, those little nuances can be good. It's always good to have tight ends in that system. And now you have a really good running mate, I guess you could say, for Kyle Pitts, where it's the yin yang theory. You want to have different players in your tight end room. You want to build a basketball team in your wide receiver room. I like the idea of this pick. Hopefully Fitzpatrick pans out.
Yeah, and with the position was really thinning out, actually, heading into the sixth round. A lot of tight ends went on day two and early on day three. So the Falcons taking a tight end that wasn't necessarily on a lot of people's boards. You know, certainly I didn't watch him. Doesn't surprise me considering how thin the position was going to be in undrafted free agency. So them sort of securing their guy, it makes sense to me. Adnan, you might know a little bit more about Fitzpatrick than we do, considering you watched a lot of Georgia. What do you think about that addition?
I think that this was purely a Lee Smith replacement. I think if Lee Smith had not retired after the end of last season, you know, the Falcons would have obviously gone elsewhere at this point. But yeah, Fitzpatrick, you can tell that Arthur Smith prioritizes that third string blocking specialist tight end who will carve out, you know, holes in the run game and, you know, who also you can leak out a little bit, especially around the goal line area. They spent a seventh round pick in exchange for Lee Smith last year from Buffalo. And now they spent their last pick, which was, you know, a late sixth round pick on Fitzpatrick this year. This was, you know, a bit of a surprise to me when it happened. But, you know, looking at the history with Arthur Smith and his teams and what happened last year, we shouldn't be too surprised that the pick happened. Fitzpatrick, I think he only had 80 something yards last year. He had one career touchdown in his time at Georgia, but he's going to be someone who's going to be out there probably on every single goal line package where it's, you know, first and goal, second and goal, where there are obvious run down situations, probably on fourth and shorts as well. Someone whom you can absolutely leak out and who you can throw a jump ball to just because he's so huge. And, you know, it never hurts having somebody like that on your team. Another guy who's also incredibly, incredibly aggressive. I feel like I said, they really made an emphasis to, you know, hit home on that aggression to really change the identity of this team. And I mean, you're talking about potentially having a lineup out there with Auden Tate, Kyle Pitts, Drake London, John Fitzpatrick, and in goal line packages where, you know, these guys are physical mismatches against what the defense can throw out there, because you can probably cover one of these guys, you know, with a very tall DB, a linebacker, but you probably won't be able to out-height four or five of them all at the same time. So it's definitely going to be a really good opportunity. I'm expecting the Falcons to be much, much better at converting goal-to-go situations into 7 points as opposed to only settling for field goals the way that we've grown way, way too accustomed to over the past few years. So, you know, hopefully we don't see as much Young Wei Koo in the red zone this year.
Yes, as much as we all love Young Wei Koo, I would hope that we get more red zone touchdowns, because how often they get to the red zone might be the, I'm hoping that, you know, how often they actually get down there will be the issue, but when they do, they could convert it. That's what I'm hoping for, at least in terms of
we may
progress.
See a lot more Young Wei Koo high 40, 50 yard attempts this year.
So, you know, but draft Young Wei Koo in fantasy, folks, is what Adnan's trying to say here, but get those,
I'll
get
always
those long kicks.
Young Wei Koo,
yeah, of course you always should.
He's a very good kicker.
Yeah. Draftable kicker for sure. All right. Well, Tyler, we appreciate you hanging out with us and going through this class. Any final sort of overall thoughts on the Falcons draft class, how you think they did? Do you think they got, you know, better? I don't think any of us think they're like a competitor now or anything like that. But what do you think about the class as a whole?
I gave this draft class an A- in my article for NBC Sports Edge. I really liked how they attacked it. They got value. I still getting Ridder over Willis is what kind of docked it down that little bit for me. But you take a quarterback in round three that you think can potentially be a starter. If he ends up doing that, it's an absolute home run. Like, I really like what they did. And they're approaching it where they know they don't have to win now. They're trying to really build this roster out. And with the $40 million plus in dead cap that they have currently, you're going to have to expect a lot of these guys to play meaningful snaps early. And that's going to help in that long-term growth. I really like how they attack the draft. Did I prefer other players? Sure, but that's semantics at that point. They didn't get anybody that was an absurdly poor value, and to me that's a massive win.
Yeah, I agree. It's sort of, there's always going to be like, oh, I would have had, you know, X player a little bit higher, or Y player a little bit higher. That's just sort of the nature of drafting. We don't have the same boards as these teams, but were they good players? Were they worthy of the picks? That's sort of where we're at, and I agree with you. It's a good, very good draft. You know, is it perfect? You know, we'll see. If Ritter becomes a franchise quarterback, then it's an A+. But if he does it, you know, it's still a good draft. It was worth the shot. Tyler, we really appreciate you hanging out with us tonight, going through the whole class. Obviously, I'm sure we'll have you on more this offseason as we get into more stuff. We're going to go into some Falcons contract and salary cap stuff, so we're not going to force you to deliver any takes on that. But before you go, anything else you want to plug?
Absolutely. You can follow me on Twitter at TheRealForno. I am working on a series for the Vikings Wire under my Skull Search umbrella, where I'm breaking down everybody in the Vikings draft class. And right now I'm working on a piece about Andrew Booth Jr., who I'm still amazed it was available at 42. And then you can also find my work at NBC Sports Edge. I had a lot of pieces coming out pre-draft and the weekend of the draft. Obviously, it's a little revisionist, including my grades piece that dropped on Sunday. So you can go ahead and check those out. And yeah, bada bing.
Absolutely, guys. He is Tyler.
I was wondering in real time during the draft, what did you think of the Vikings trade back? Like just the overall move in the first round.
I think they could have gotten a little bit more value, especially when you consider both the Jimmy Johnson and Rich Hill charts. But if you look at ones that are more production-based with analytical mindsets, the Fitzgerald-Spielberger chart, PFF, as far as war, both of them had the Vikings winning pretty easily. I don't like giving up 46 to then get 66. That is a sticking point for me, but honestly, it's semantics. They were able to flip those picks and get good players early. I was overall fine with the trades. I did like that Kwesi Dofamensa had no problem packaging picks to go back up, something that Rick Spielman only did in extreme scenarios. So he was totally willing to play the market, understanding where guys were going to come off the board. Got Andrew Booth at a value, because if he tests well, they probably take him at 12. He didn't get to test at all because of the sports hernia. They got him at 42. Massive win. Overall, I'm fine with it, but I'm interested to see how Kwesi prioritizes draft process moving forward. This year, it was power five schools, all 10 picks, power five, and 10-yard splits, with, I believe, 8 of them having 90th percentile or higher 10-yard splits. So I'm very intrigued to see how that continues to progress.
Yeah, that we're both sort of getting to know our new regimes and their tendencies. You know, with the Falcons, it seems like Senior Bowl and overall RAS scores are high on their list of priorities. So I know you're going to enjoy trying to decipher what your new GM is doing as well. But guys, he is Tyler Fornes at The Real Forno. Terrific work over at NBC Sports Edge, at The Daily Norseman, and at The Vikings Wire. Tyler, thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you next time.
Gentlemen, thank you. Have a good rest of your night.
Yep, have a good night, man. All right, guys. Tyler Fornes, met him at the Senior Bowl along with Thor. Had a lot of good times this offseason with the draft, and we're going to keep those good times rolling throughout the offseason as we get to more draft and undrafted coverage as well. But for now, we've got some more free agency stuff to talk about, Adnan, as the Falcons extended Grady Jarrett after much gnashing of teeth about, oh, does Grady want to be here? Is Grady going to be here long term? Does he even want to play for the Falcons? Whatever. Then they turn around and sign him to an extension that actually looks pretty good on paper. What's your thought on the Grady Jarrett extension, just the fact that they were able to get it done in the first place?
I mean, I'm thrilled about it. First and foremost, because a pre-write that I wrote actually got to be published, because most of the pre-writes we write don't get published.
So I
was incredibly excited about that. But yeah, no, this, even if you go into a rebuilding phase, which the Falcons right now this year are obviously rebuilding, you don't want to strip it down so bare to the point where you kind of lose yourself. Because a lot of these teams, you know, you start to rebuild. The Jaguars are a prime example. They've been rebuilding for their entire franchise history, more or less. But, you know, they had that great run in 2017, and then they tore every single thing down, and they found themselves completely lost in the wilderness again, which is, you know, where they are now, trying to find themselves by, you know, looking and overpaying for players in free agency, like guys like Christian Kirk, and ruining the wide receiver market. But you can never have too many good players. And, you know, Grady Jarrett has been the best player on defense for the Falcons for a long time. You know, you could argue last year that maybe AJ Terrell was better, but it's valuable to have multiple good players. And Grady Jarrett, he's signed in now throughout what's essentially the rest of his prime. You know, he'll be 33 years old when he's a free agent next. You lowered his cap hit this year. It's pretty reasonable, manageable at $20.6 million, then $20.3 million after that in the coming years. If you want to move on from him, you can in a couple of years and save $12 million against the cap, but I don't think that they will. I think he's someone that the team will want to keep around for a long time, especially given the fact that he was drafted by the team. His dad was a Falcons legend himself, Jesse Tuggle. And I mean, you know, this is just a really, really great signing. I like it on both ends. Grady Jarrett gets his security as well, long-term for 3 more years. Great for someone who was a fifth-round pick to play into his third contract and to really accumulate that generational wealth for his entire family. And yeah, this was, you know, I'm absolutely thrilled, and I'm really, really happy that we'll have Grady Jarrett here, and hopefully we'll finally give Grady Jarrett some help for the first time in his career along the defensive line.
Yeah, no kidding. And, you know, I thought it was a very good deal. I think most, pretty much around the NFL, everyone seems to be pretty surprised at how reasonable the deal is for the Falcons. You know, $17 million a year for Jarrett. Obviously, that's premium defensive tackle money, but it's only guaranteed through next year. So the Falcons, like Adnan said, they can get out of this deal in 2024 and save a lot of money. And in 2025, they can save basically all of his cap hits. I'll just read off some of the details for you guys real quick. His 2022 cap hit was lowered to 12.9, roughly, you know, 12.93 million, which is a $10.9 million savings. And I know we had a question from Corey about how they lowered it, and I will definitely get to that. I'll help explain that. Then over the next 3 years, it's about 20 and change. So 20.6 million in 2023, 20.3 million, 2024, 20.3 million, 2025, which I think, again, is high for a defensive tackle. It's certainly fair for a defensive tackle of Grady Jarrett's stature, especially if he gets back to his 2020, 2019 sort of level, where he's putting up, you know, 30 plus pressures and 4 plus sacks along with all of his, you know, high run stuff rates and such. So I think it's a great deal. The Falcons have a lot of flexibility with it. They were able to lower his cap hit this year. The reason that they're able to do that is when you sign a new deal, you can convert some of it to his base salary into signing bonus, which is basically like a restructure. Like, you can kind of restructure the deal as a part of the extension. So they basically converted almost all of Grady's base salary into signing bonus, and then they spread that out now over 4 years of the contract instead of when he, you know, they couldn't restructure his contract this year because it was the last year of the deal. You can't restructure the last year of a deal because there's nowhere to send the money. With the extension, now you get all these extra years, and it allows you actually to spread it out just a little bit. So, you know, this, you know, 15, I think it was like $14 million or so that they spread out over 4 years. You know, you're talking about $3 something million a year. This isn't a significant amount of money now. So his $17 million a year sort of average value plus this, you know, $3 million of signing bonus, it's only $20 million cap hit. And I feel like after, you know, this year, 2023, we'll probably see like 4 or 5 defensive tackles sign for more than Grady Jarrett next year. Just because the cap's going to explode and all this stuff, and we're going to look back on this deal as this huge bargain. So I think it's a great deal from that financial perspective. Also, all the things Adnan touched on, like, this is a cornerstone player on your defensive line, one of the only established good veterans you have, and to be able to keep him for a fair deal and to know that he's not trying to escape Atlanta which I think was floated around. And who would blame him for wanting to go to a contender after being stuck on a losing Falcons team for the past, you know, 4 or 5 years? The fact that he wants to be here, that he's signing the extension for, I think, a fair deal and not, you know, demanding an overpayment or anything like that. I think it says a lot about Grady that I know people were clamoring year after year for Matt Ryan to sign a team-friendly contract. You should never expect a player to do it, but when you do, you should give him props. And I think Grady signed a team-friendly deal here, and I think he deserves props for it. He wants to be in Atlanta. He wants to finish his career here. He wants to play his prime years here. And I hope the Falcons can reward him with some good teams here in the near future so he's not just stuck languishing still on a bad team. But yeah, Adna, what do you think about sort of the money involved and how they were able to create cap space and sign him for a reasonable amount going forward?
No, I really like it. And you mentioned that when it's just a one-year thing, there's nowhere to really put that money. That's why we see now teams have started to take up the practice of putting in those void years on contracts. We saw famously with Taysom Hill with the Saints where they'll put in those fake years just to spread that money around to lower the cap hit right away. Obviously, that money will eventually have to be paid if you do cut him. I think the Falcons were going to do the exact same thing with Matt Ryan on his extension this year before the Deshaun Watson stuff happened. But they never submitted that extension to the NFL. So, you know, we would have gotten a firsthand look at that. But no, it's incredibly fair. It's an incredibly fair amount of money, like you said. He could have really strong-armed the Falcons a little bit and, you know, asked for as much money as possible. I don't think he got maximum value right now, just given how good he is, even though he did suffer a bit of a regression this past year. But, you know, I'm mostly chalking that up to just having less help than usual. Than he's had minimal help, you know, with the Falcons since arriving here, save for maybe that 2017 season. But last year it was especially no help along the defensive line. You know, I think the team's second best defensive tackle, you could make an argument, was Anthony Rush, and he was what, an undrafted guy. There was no pass rushing help. Teams could really just key in on Grady Jarrett every single time. Hopefully this year, they probably will be keying on him this year as well, especially early on. But hopefully Ebby Cady and D'Angelo Malone can make an impact right away and, you know, sort of punish teams for doing that. And even if they can't, then, you know, this should be a team where the defense is a lot better in 2023. Because there's really nowhere to go but up for this unit. And Grady Jarrett, he'll be here in 2023. He'll be at the center of it. And just the fact that he, like I mentioned, he signed in through his age 32 season. That's toward the tail end of a player's prime. So I think he'll be a high-level performer with this team throughout his entire contract. And I think he'll be on the team throughout his entire contract as well. And someone who, you know, if you need the cap space in 2024 and he's still like playing very well, which I think he will, you could potentially restructure the contract in 2024 if you need the cap space. Then Falcons won't need it next year. They'll have so much cap space next season. But, you know, that's certainly an option as well. You could even give him that fake extension with those void years that I just talked about after that. So it's a lot. You can do a lot of gymnastics with the cap with any contract, but it's especially a lot more reasonable and a lot more helpful when the player in question is very, very good and is signed in on a deal that's not that doesn't really break the bank.
Yeah, I agree. People don't, I think a lot of casual fans don't understand that it's really hard to get production as a defensive tackle, as a pass rusher, when your edge play is just disastrously bad from a pass rushing standpoint. Like, you have to collapse the pocket to get your interior guys sacks. Like, that's just how it works. Otherwise, guys are just going to escape the pocket every time, which is what happened to Jarrett, you know, we still saw Jarrett get double-digit pressures, even though he only had one sack. Like, he still had a lot of pressures. He was still effective. He was also still a really good run defender. He had like 60 tackles for a defensive tackle, which is a lot. That's a lot of tackles for a defensive tackle. Very productive player. I think people get too hung up on the sacks. So if you can get that edge pressure, Grady Jarrett will go back to being a very good interior pass rusher as well. And obviously some of it probably had to do with the new scheme, and he had to play a little bit of a different technique sometimes, but he's still going to get to play three tech a lot. He's still going to get to be a pass rusher a lot. And the hope is that with a better supporting cast, the production will return. And clearly the Falcons think that it will. And so does he, if he's agreed to return on, you know, on this deal. So, I really like the signing. I'm excited to have him back, and not just because I have the jersey and it's the new Grady Jarrett jersey. You know, I would have been upset if I only could wear it for 1 year. Okay. So thank you, Falcons, for, you know, protecting my jersey. Cause I the other jersey I had was a Julio jersey, and like, I was able to wear that for like 4 or 5 years. So I should hopefully at least get 4 or 5 years out of Grady Jarrett too.
And you'll be able to wear the Julio jersey eventually after he retires. Yeah. That'll be one of those jerseys where,
yeah, you know, evergreen,
one of those old school ones. Yeah. It's like a Brady Patriots one.
Yep. Yep.
You know, a Peyton Manning Indianapolis Colts one. Like, if you see someone wearing a Peyton Manning Colts jersey, you're not questioning it at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, guys, I know we had some tips come in. I will definitely get to those here in just a second. I know, Corey, you had some draft takes, and George had another one, and then Jason Gaines has a couple. We'll get to those. I just wanted to get through the Grady extension real quick before we took a break. But I do see those, guys. We will get to those here in just a second. Thank you so much for that. We do appreciate it. Also, take this time, like and subscribe if you're still here. We really appreciate those metrics. Really help us out, help the channel grow. We did hit 4,000 subscribers during the draft party, so big shout out to everyone for helping the channel continue to grow. When I took this channel over back in like 2017, 2018. We did the original draft party on here in 2017, and then we didn't do anything on YouTube for like another 2 years. So it's a little bit interesting, but ever since then, it's been a steady upward stream of subscribers and viewers and everything. You know, I remember the Facebook Live days, Adnan, where we would have like, you know, 10, 15 people for one of these shows. And now we're after the draft. We're in May. There's nothing. I mean, there is something going on, obviously, with the Jarrett extension, but, you know, 180 people tuned in at one point, 150 still tuned in now, like an hour and 15 minutes in.
Yeah, the thing is, those 10, 15 on Facebook Live, they're the same ones watching.
They're still here. Yeah. You guys are still here. So, you know, appreciate you, all of you guys that have stuck with us. You know, I'm sorry about Facebook Live. You know, we saw the error of our ways and we got off there as soon as we could. We'll leave it at that. But we just really appreciate you guys. So I did want to reference that the Falcons now, with this money, the $10.9 million they saved with this extension, now sitting at $14.5 million, roughly, million in cap space, which is, you know, a lot, obviously. That is enough to cover their draft class, which is about $5 million, give or take. And it's enough to cover the final two contracts they need to pay for under the top 51 rule, which I won't get into, but suffice to say they need about $1.82 million to cover those last contracts. They're also probably going to keep, you know, $3 to $5 million for emergency signings. They always do this. Teams pretty much always do this. You take all that away, the team has somewhere between, you know, $2.5 to $4.5 million roughly in space. So they could potentially bring in a veteran or two, you know, one mid-range veteran or a couple of depth guys. And if they were to do that, Adnan, what do you have any names in mind of guys you'd like them to go after at this point in the process?
We've been talking about Nick Easton forever, right?
Yeah. Yeah. They did visit with him. They just didn't officially sign him.
Yeah. He's someone that, is from, you know, Terry Fontenot's days back in New Orleans. And you know, someone where you'd really like to stick it to the Saints a little bit by signing him, but I'm really, really worried about this left guard position. I don't think that, well, Mayfield will get his opportunity, but, you know, I don't think that he's the answer at that position. I don't think that Drew Dahlman is a guard at the NFL level. I think he projects as a center. And, you know, Schaefer, I don't think he's ready for the NFL either. So, I'm looking at some interior offensive line help, and Easton's the first name that pops out, just given the connection to Fontenot and given the fact that the Falcons have already spoken to him. I think if he comes in, he'd be an immediate day one starter. And there are some guys where, you know, we're not even talking about who could be potential trades. You know, one of Thomas Dimitroff's best moves of all time was making that move for Andy Levitre after that horrendous week three preseason game against the Dolphins, where the interior of the offensive line was just ravaged in that game. And he went out there and traded, I think, a fifth rounder and a sixth rounder for Levitre. And Levitre ended up helping the team get to the Super Bowl, ended up being a seamless fit with and Kyle Shanahan's offense. So even if the team doesn't make any signings this summer, don't rule out possible moves at the end of the cut period. And, you know, whether that be signing free agents or making a trade. They did sign a guard last year after preseason. I forget his name, the guy from the Browns.
I forgot his name. Yeah, I know who you're talking about. I can't think of it either.
The guy recovered the fumble in the game against the Falcons. Mm-hmm. Didn't really do much, you know. he was just depth, but
yeah,
that something like that is what I'm talking about.
Yeah. That's where I would spend the money. Like, I would go get a left guard. I would get a starting left guard and not leave it up to Jalen Mayfield. If they want to win games, I feel like that's the best way to do so, is to make sure that you're solidified at left guard. I think Hennessy will be fine, honestly. I think Hennessy is fine at center.
Thank you, Kieran. It's Colby Gossett.
Yeah, that's right. Gossett. Yeah, that's it.
No, I'm driving the Hennessy train. I think that Hennessy will be a very good long-term starter at center. I feel like I'm beating the Matt Hennessy drum more than anyone else in Falcons media. Hennessy's my guy. I think he'll be just fine.
Yeah, I think Hennessy's going to be fine. So I'm not worried about that spot so much as left guard, where, like, look, Jalen Mayfield could get better. He will get better. You know, is better starter caliber? That's the big question. And I think, considering how many veterans out there, you're not going to have to break the bank for somebody. Like, you could probably get a starter in here for $2 to $3 million, and you'd still have money left over for a depth guy. Like, to me, I would go out, and Jason Gaines mentions this in his tip with the $2. Thank you, Jason. You know, Jason says he'd go sign JC Treader, Nick Easton, or Quentin Spain, who, yes, correct, Jason, Quentin Spain spent time with Arthur Smith in Tennessee. I was surprised they didn't sign him last year, to be honest. To start at left guard over Mayfield, and Jason also mentions that Josh Harris's replacement at long snapper went on IR, which is true. They did sign another long snapper, and we thought we were going to get, you know, hashtag long snapper battle, and unfortunately it looks like we're just going to get Liam McCullough as our new long snapper, unless they sign somebody else, so hopefully that will be okay. But yeah, I mean, I think all those names were good, Jason. You know, I think Nate Herbig, who was just cut by the Eagles, I think is another option. I would get Spain. That would be the guy that I would prioritize. He's a little bit older, but he's basically a one-year rental. He's someone that we know can start. He was like the only good interior player on the Bengals. Had like a 70-plus PFF grade. Not going to break the bank. That's who I'd go get. You know, Nick Easton gives you that center flexibility, but since the Falcons have Dahlman, it's not as necessary to get another guy who can play center in here. JC Treader's the same way. You know, I like JC Treader. I think he's more of a pure center. He could probably play guard, certainly, but I would lean towards Quentin Spain or Nate Herbig. Herbig played mostly right guard. He did start, I believe, 6 games at left guard either last year or the year before, so he has left guard experience, certainly. But yeah, Spain has played left guard most of his career. Rock solid, obviously knows the system. That's who I would go get. And then with the other, you know, if he can get in here at for $2 to $3 million, you have another $2 to $3 million to play with. I mean, I'd go get an edge rusher, you know, like a Trey Flowers, Melvin Ingram. If, you know, Melvin Ingram's gonna be too expensive based on this UFA thing that the Chiefs put on him, that they're basically offering him like a $4.5 million contract, and the fact that he hasn't signed that yet means that he's looking for a bigger deal than that. So Ingram's probably not gonna work, but like Trey Flowers, maybe. Kyle Van Noy, guys that have experience in a similar system to this. You know, Flowers, yeah, more
maybe
base
you get
end, but,
maybe
yeah.
get freaky and you go get RG3 apparently,
yeah, just
you know.
for the lulz, yeah.
Apparently, know. teams are teams are reaching out to him, which I think he's lying about.
I mean, I don't hate RG3 as a backup quarterback, certainly, but like, you know, I don't know that I prioritize that.
We have a backup quarterback.
Franks.
Take Franks over RG3 at this point.
Yeah. I agree with what you said, Jason. I think guard is sort of where I would go with it, but we'll see. You know, I think another depth cornerback would be good. Like, I would re-sign Fabian Moreau in a heartbeat if he'd come back for like a couple million. We know Moreau was like a good, solid number two corner. The Falcons can have him as their like first guy off the bench, basically, which I think would be awesome. It would give them really deep, good secondary. So I would go get Fabian Moreau back for a couple million and sign a guard like Quentin Spain, and then have a much more well-rounded roster. You know, maybe they could get an edge instead of Fabian or corner, but you know, it just depends on who they want. They might also just sort of wait until camp and see what happens, and they could possibly save even more money. You know, Kendall Sheffield's still on the roster. He could save $2.5 million if they cut him.
I don't know why that move has been made yet.
Only thing I could think of is they love athletes, and Sheffield's like almost a 10, you know, .0 RAS sort of athlete. And they want to see him in camp, and they can cut him at any time during camp, you know, before week one, and get his savings. So there's not necessarily a rush unless they need the money to sign someone immediately. But that's where I'm at. They could still create a little bit more money if they wanted to. They could go sign a couple of cheaper free agents if they want to. I know a lot of people have mentioned that they want the Falcons to sign another nose tackle. I don't think it's going to happen. I understand wanting like another big defensive tackle, but what you need to understand is like, only one nose tackle is going to be active on game day. They will probably have another nose tackle on the practice squad, but they're not going to activate more than one for during the game. They just don't. Like, they're going to activate 4 to 5 down linemen at most. You know, usually 4 are going to be active. So it's unlikely you're going to see 2 nose tackles active. It's very rare. Don't expect them to sign another nose tackle necessarily. They're going to roll with Anthony Rush. They may sign someone, like I said, to the practice squad. They brought in an undrafted guy, Timothy Horn, who's got some length. You know, we'll see if he can make any splash. You know, we'll see what happens there. But I wouldn't expect nose tackle to be a big priority for them, to be honest. And Anthony Rush, I think, flashed. He was better than Tyler Davison. And I think giving, you know, nose tackle is a position where you pull guys off the street and they can be good nose tackles for you. Now, they're not going to necessarily be Dontari Poe level pass rushing nose tackles, but in terms of run stuffing, Rush was fine. He had a sack, he had pressures, he had tackles for loss and like very few snaps. So this is a guy that, I think deserves a shot. They brought him back. I think he'll be fine at nose tackle. And we'll see, you know, what else happens there. But I don't think that's going to be a priority for them to go get someone else at nose tackle. Anything else on the Jared extension or free agents, Non, before we move on?
No, not really. I think we touched on everything.
Yeah, I think we covered it pretty well. I think we covered it pretty well. So, all right. Let me get to some of these questions. First, going back to Corey Carter. Corey Carter with the $5. Thank you, Corey, so much. He says, how I would have drafted it if it was up to me, and seeing, you know, where players ended up going. So the hindsight draft. Okay, so this is like the perfect draft in hindsight. So we have Corey with Kyle Hamilton with the first pick, Malik Willis with the second pick, the third pick, N'Kobe Dean, fourth pick, Perrion Winfrey. Yeah, I can't believe he fell so far. That's ridiculous. Kingsley Enagbare with pick 82. Jerome Ford at 114. So in your mock, they kept the fourth rounder. They didn't trade up. Matt Letzko, the offensive tackle, 151. Alec Lindstrom, the center, at 190. And Justin Ross, the wide receiver from Clemson, with the last pick. Yeah, I mean, I don't hate it. I think they didn't get a wide receiver until Justin Ross, who, as much as I like Justin Ross, took a while to even get signed as an undrafted free agent, because from what I've heard, teams worry that like one hit could not only end his NFL career, but put him in the hospital and stuff like that. So that's why he wasn't drafted and was, you know, signed late in the process. So I'm pulling for Justin Ross. I hope he's okay, but that's a guy who needs to be really careful with his NFL future, considering his spinal injury. And then Corey came in with a 2023 draft as well. You beat me to it. I haven't done a 2023 draft.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. But, yeah, he said Bryce Young at the top, obviously the quarterback from Alabama. Broderick Jones, the tackle from Georgia, with the second-round pick. Tank Bigsby, the running back from Auburn. I like Tank. He certainly fits the scheme. With the third-rounder. Sam Laporta, the tight end from Iowa, with the fourth-rounder. I drafted Sam Laporta early this season, like with one of my really early mocks before he went back to school. So I like Sam Laporta a lot. Miles Murphy, UNC defensive tackle, with the second fourth rounder. That's right, we have a second fourth rounder from the Julio Jones trade. Bumper Poole, the linebacker from Arkansas. Which, did you just draft him for the name, Corey? You have to let me know, because Bumper Poole is an amazing name. And then Dallas Turner, another linebacker from Alabama, with the final pick. I don't have a problem with any of those picks. You know, we'll see if they need to draft a quarterback at the top. You know, hopefully Ritter pans out to where you're like, either you can trade out of that premium pick, or you can take like Will Anderson and just really add like this, you know, elite edge one that you desperately need. So I would like that if they don't need to take a quarterback. But otherwise, if they do end up in the top two, you know, it's probably either going to be a quarterback or Will Anderson. So I feel like you can't go wrong there. You know, whichever one you feel like is the bigger need, you go for it. Let's see. Just two more questions here, guys, and then we'll wrap things up. First of all, George Costanza with the $3. Thank you, George. He says, I'm going to put a grand on the Eagles winning the NFC at plus 1,700. So that would translate to 17K if you win. So, I mean, that's definitely a big payout. Wait, it might even be more than that, right? No, it'd be 17K. Yeah. So obviously if you hit that, George, that'd be big money. So
I always knew George was really rich.
Yeah.
He's putting $1,000 on the Eagles.
Yeah. He says he's certain that Philly made the best choice by taking Jordan Davis to pair with Fletcher Cox. When you can shut down the run with your four down linemen, you can force the QBs to throw into coverage and cover two. Yeah. That Eagles defense is starting to look nasty. I think once Nakobe Dean gets in there too next year, that's going to be really nasty. So,
Do you really trust Jalen Hurts with $1,000?
Right. At least they have AJ Brown now. So there is that, but and the NFC is also kind of weak, you know, so it wouldn't be, I think Eagles winning their division, I'm assuming the odds are nowhere near as good for them winning their division. I wouldn't be shocked if they beat the Cowboys for the division, but, it's your money, George. This is not financial advice. You know, we're making that clear. We're not doing any financial advice on this here podcast, but, all right. Finally, from Jason Gaines, another final draft take here. He said, I would have preferred to trade down in round one to accumulate more picks and then get Davis, Jordan Davis. I think he would have really helped out the front seven. Also wish that we could have got the punt god to the Falcons. Since we didn't get him, I would sign punter Michael Pilardi. He's a lefty as well. Yeah, Jason. I mean, I think if they had gotten a good enough offer, they may have considered trading down. But considering that if they really wanted Drake London, they knew they weren't going to get him after a trade down, you know, maybe they just weren't really willing to do
it. They definitely got offers. They said they got offers, but they said they never really considered any of them.
Yeah. So they must not have been good enough.
Yeah, that tells me that, yeah. Because it takes two to trade down. Like, obviously, I want to trade down every draft. I would love to trade down in the first round.
Yeah.
You know, save for a few. But if there weren't good enough offers, obviously nobody was trying to move up for a quarterback, so that was off the board, as we saw. And that I think that really kind of took away from it. I feel like if teams knew that the wide receiver run would be that epic, then there probably would have been some better trade offers, but you know, that's hindsight, and we're not really working with hindsight here.
Yeah, exactly. So you can't go back, but in terms of the signing of a punter, I mean, it could happen. I think we'll see what happens in the preseason. They seem to like Dom Maggio. You know, I personally, we haven't really seen much of him because I think he got hurt last preseason. We didn't really get to see him kick. He ended up on IR. Then he sort of stuck around on the practice squad. He made his return, so they must like him to some extent. They didn't bring back Thomas Morstead, so they either thought that Maggio is good enough, or they were planning to bring in competition. They didn't get somebody in the draft. They did bring in a guy that I think is really intriguing. That's Seth Vernon from Portland State, their punter, former wide receiver, 6'5", 230. So we're bringing in more size in the punting unit as well. But he's actually just a really good punter. I think he averaged 44.9 yards per punt this last season, which I think would have been sixth in the NCAA. That's a really good punting average. He's clearly got a cannon leg. I think for his career, he averaged 44.6. So, like, I mean, it wasn't just like he had one good year either. It was consistent. So I like Seth Vernon. I think he's a tremendous athlete with a lot of size. That obviously helps on kick coverage and on teams and stuff like that. So I actually, in my roster projection, which if you guys haven't seen it, you can check it out on the site. It went up yesterday. My one UDFA I had making it at this point, you know, way too early, was Seth Vernon, because again, we haven't seen much of Dom Maggio, and I think Vernon's a really interesting punter. So we'll see, you know, we'll see if he can make a name for himself and make the roster here. But I do like Vernon's upside. And if they don't find anything they like, there's going to be punters available at the end of camp for sure. Because we saw three punters drafted. So like Bradley Pinion from Tampa Bay, very good punter, obviously. He's probably going to be released in favor of, you know, Camarda, I think, went to the Bucks. And there were two other punters drafted too, in Ariza and Jordan Stout, who have veterans there as well. You know, Matt Hack in Buffalo. So there will be punters available. Much like last year, the Falcons can sort of just wait and then grab the guy they want, like Morstead. You know, they sort of just waited and pounced on him, got good production. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. I don't think they need to, like, rush out and add a punter right now, unless they feel really bad about the guys they have. But the fact that they haven't done anything so far at punter leads me to believe that they're comfortable just sort of riding it out and seeing what shakes loose at the end of the preseason. Or maybe they're just happy with who they have. So, all right, that's everything. Again, guys, like and subscribe. Really appreciate that. Not any final thoughts before we wrap up tonight?
Nope. Go Falcons.
Go Falcons.
We're in the dead period, man.
We got some nugs this week. We got the Jarrett thing. If only they could have done the Jarrett next week, we could have like squeezed one more week of like quality content.
Yeah, it's gonna get slow.
Yeah. It's gonna get slow, guys. We're gonna come up with cool things to talk about. I think what we're gonna do this year is we're gonna do like little position group clusters, and we'll talk about the players on the roster and sort of our thoughts. So you know, we'll probably do like quarterback, running back, and fullback one day, like one week, and you know, try to spread it out and get some content. We'll have little signings and things like that too. I think next week we're gonna have Eric back on the show, and Thor might be coming on again as well to talk about the undrafted guys. He's currently doing the deep dive on all the team's undrafted classes to grade the undrafted classes, because he's a madman. So you know, he can give us some undrafted takes too potentially next week. But we will be working on it. We'll be giving you guys some content. And the Falcoholic podcast feed is back up and running also. So if you're someone who likes to listen to the podcasts, they are going to be available on there again. We had some just OG podcasts this week as well. I broke down the Falcons draft class with Will McFadden on Monday. The idea is going forward that hopefully like all the episodes will sort of be hybrids. Like there'll be a video version that I upload and a podcast.
I know we're wrapping up, but I really need to run. So
okay, no problem, man. No problem.
You guys, yep. And yep. I will see you guys next week.
All right, likely. See ya, Adnan. Thanks, man.
All right,
Man, Adnan just abandoning me at the last second. No, it's all good. It's all good, guys. We are wrapping up. So, yeah, really appreciate everyone for tuning in. Like I said, we'll have more content coming. And, yeah, it's getting into the dead zone. We'll probably, you know, I'm going to be doing my best to try to find a way to get down to training camp again. As far as I know, I will be able to cover all the days of training camp. So I think it's like, I don't know, 8-10 days or whatever it is. Probably be doing another fundraiser for that, because you know I think it's doubtful that I'm gonna have the trip covered by you know our overlords here. So I'll let you guys know the details on that. You guys were super generous for the Senior Bowl. And I don't want to like depend on that too much. But I know you guys also want the takes. So, you know, the takes must flow, and I'll leave it up to you guys, on that one. But, again, I just really appreciate everyone for tuning in. We will be back next Wednesday for more content. Hopefully there'll be more to talk about too. Rookie minicamp, it will be coming soon as well. So guys, thank you so much. Like I said, like and subscribe. You can check out our Patreon page if you want to support the show on a monthly basis. The link to that is patreon.com. So everyone who's stuck with us and supported us there as well. We will have a Q&A coming soon. Couldn't get the guests together this week. It just didn't work out, but it should be next week. Should be next week that we get the Q&A going. So I appreciate your patience on that, guys. And yeah, until then, again, guys, have a great night. Thank you all so much for tuning in. We will see you next Wednesday, once again at 8 p.m. on the Falcoholic Live. Until then, guys, have a great night.